welcome to the Mudhorn Clan cast on the Fangirl Zone. I am Beskar Dave.
I am Sean Fangirl S.
And I'm Sith Lord Steve. Today we're talking about Chapter 19 of The Mandalorian, titled The Convert, Episode 3 of Season 3, written by Jon Favreau and Noah Clore, and directed by Lee Chung.
Episode recap. How many words? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Here's the recap. On Coruscant, former Imperials find amnesty in the New Republic.
Or do they?
Or do they? You know, it could be okay. A changeling there.
Ooh, wait a minute, because they exist in this universe, too.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you just casually mentioned that, Dave, even though I know where you're hinting at, but, but it's a possibility. You never know. So let's talk about initial reactions for this episode. All right. I'm trying to steel myself for this because I have a bad feeling. But Steve, how did you feel about this?
I liked the episode. It was okay. The Mando and Bo parts were excellent. Pershing, I like that storyline as well. I kind of expected to see Mon Mothma or somebody off of Andor in Coruscant, though.
Is the client still alive or is the client dead? I can't remember.
Where does Andor fall with the story in the timeline?
I have it.
Well, Dave, what was your initial reaction for the episode?
I sent a message, a text. After the first 10 minutes, I sent a text to my stepdaughter. I said, I've seen the first 10 minutes of the episode of The Mandalorian, and I'm set for life. Oh, man, that was so exciting, so fun. But I think we can understand why the rest of the episode seemed like a bottle episode.
Right.
They really didn't go anywhere due to how much they blew the entire budget on that fighting scene. That's a lot of effects.
Right. You know?
So, yeah, I liked it. I got a lot of questions about the closing. Pretty intriguing.
Yes.
I sent a message to you guys saying that kind of blew me away. Well, we'll talk about it then, I guess.
Yeah.
We have to. I'm just wondering what she's up to. Apparently she's the convert, I guess, but geez.
You can look at it that way. At least I took it that way, it wasn't only Pershing, but it was also Bo-Katan.
Yep, or even Alaya Kane.
Right.
Except that I have my suspicions about her, to say the least.
So
yeah, if she could do that to Pershing, she could probably have something to do with Gideon escaping.
Yeah.
I had mixed reactions watching it because I was super excited with the whole Mando Bo-Katan thing and how that all played out. It's like, oh, okay, all right, you can see the body language change a little bit, but it's like, you're one of us now. It's like, wait, what? I was excited with that, and then when we switched over to Coruscant, I'm like, okay, so they're just trying to push it forward to tell us what's going on. I get that. And then it kept going and I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And after watching it, I'm like, I get they want to push it forward to push us into, I'm trying to think of the words I want here, one of the other series, because a lot of buzz that I've read was, this is one step forward to show us when Thrawn comes in, like how that's all going to come back, which I don't see how. But I've also read that this is like, oh, this is going to show how the cloning experiments or the cloning started for the Emperor. A spoiler alert, if you haven't watched all the movies by now.
Right.
Sorry, I should have said that first. But I don't know. I was just like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like that, I feel like should have been more with maybe another show. Maybe they should have started that Andor or something. I don't know. I just didn't know how I felt with this.
Here's your timeline for you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So we got Solo, a Star Wars story, and then Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then there's Star Wars Rebels. Then comes Andor. Then, of course, the movie Rogue One, because, you know, all that work they do on Andor precedes the Star Wars story. Then A New Hope comes on, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Star Wars Resistance, then The Mandalorian, then the Book of Boba Fett. So the next big step is Ahsoka, where you may get a lot of answers to your questions.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, and I'm hoping. So Mandalorian is before and in conjunction with Ahsoka, because she's already stepped in.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So we're after episode 6 before 7 at this point. Like long before 7, right?
Yep. So
and I also read Force Awakens, that this could be setting up High Republic because we're supposed to be getting something on that eventually.
Yeah, they don't have it. I think there's another Star Wars listed too, but it's not on this list that I'm looking at because it hasn't existed yet, but it's coming.
It's just so confusing.
So Andor was kind of in the deep past. We've seen a young Luke Skywalker, and then when The Force Awakens, or is it The Last Jedi? He's old and bitter Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Well, he was living off weird animal milk. Okay. I don't know what he was. That was weird. I'm just saying.
Weird. Yeah.
All right. Shall we get into our top three? All right, Sean?
This is hard because I had such a mixed reaction with the whole thing. So, top three. Okay. So I will take the moment where our doctor, who I was kind of the whole time like, finally was brave enough to do something where he grabs the girl's hand. I forgot her name. I'm sorry. And they jump off the train, which, first of all, that I still, even though I knew it was all CGI, I had that like drop in my stomach when they did that. Cause like, oh my God.
Her name is Aliyah Kane, but we don't learn that. She says something.
Oh, right. I remember them introducing each other.
But she was on, I think, 4 previous episodes back in season 1, which was just a comm officer. We just knew her as comm officer aboard Moff
Gideon's destroyer. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's why I thought it was weird, because I didn't think she had a big role. And I'm like, all of a sudden, she seems to be like this bigger piece of the puzzle than we thought before.
Surprise.
So, yeah, the jumping off the train, just because that made my stomach drop. And then walking between, I was like, oh, God, it's not quite that dangerous when you walk between cars when the train's going in real life. But you still get that moment because there's like a nothingness there. It's like, oh, God, I'm going to fall into the void.
I just thought when they jumped off the train, and she must have known where there's a pallet of used Empire pillows.
Right.
Okay, the mattresses are coming up.
Yeah.
And they were pulling up to that station anyway, so the train was slowing down.
Yeah.
I still ain't jumping off a train.
Yeah.
Like, bend your knees and roll. Tuck and roll. I'd have broke something.
For sure. Me too.
I'd have missed and hit, like, the actual pallets and, like, knocked myself out.
Okay. Well, my number three is Bo loses her home. Bo-Katan has pulled Din from the living waters beneath the mines of the Civic Center, and she's still rattled from whatever she saw down in the depths. She even asked Din if he saw anything, but he says no. Just the pit that he fell into.
Yeah, there's quite a few people out there that thought he actually saw the monster. I'm like, I don't think he did, and now we know for sure he didn't.
Right. Now, of course, Bo-Katan helpfully explains that Din isn't comically clumsy. He actually fell into a pit that was cracked open when the Empire bombed the planet.
I guess so.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, as they fly back to Bo-Katan's house, the trio is immediately attacked by a group of TIE interceptors, which they note are cooler and stronger than regular Tide.
Yep. Cooler. Everybody knows that.
Din does a Captain America airdrop out of Bo-Katan's ship so he can get back to his fighter.
I wanted the superhero landing.
Yes, he tried, but nope. And they all enjoy a cool, if serviceable, dogfight. Bo doing that crazy 180 spin and then dropping out of the sky for a second was rad and very Star Wars. But it was all a diversion so a bunch of mud-scuffing TIE bombers could blow up Bo-Katan's castle. Hey, it's a good thing she didn't have any possessions or furniture to speak of, save for that one reception droid.
I know, the poor guy.
Yeah. Okay, you're number three, Dave?
Well, I'm splitting a lot of mine, one or the other, but all my scenes are related to each other. I don't know if it was the peak of O-Mate joke that he pulled, that she pulled on him. You know, go ahead, touch it. Everybody... Or just seeing Aliyah Kane and then finding out her name. I remember her from the, as the comm officer. I'm like, wow, brought her back. I mean, this was old home week.
Extremely evil in those episodes prior to this one.
Especially with that peaked cap she was wearing, the gray uniform. Right,
she's got RBF, and, you know, I love the fact that she's, like, really working that in the whole scene, every scene that she was in. So when she actually broke a smile, it was like, whoa.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Personality. By the way, that maneuver that Bo-Katan is called a Cobra maneuver. You see it if you've seen Top Gun Maverick. You've seen an Su-57 do that. So it stopped practically in midair. It was a Goose Jr. ghost when they went flying by. He's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Or something a little more profane, perhaps.
All right, Sean, you're number two.
I was going to say, actually, the the fight with the TIE fighters, just because there were so many moments. It's like, it kind of had us thinking more in depth over here, because we're like, I wonder if they had drones going and they took the drone footage. And we're trying to think of more of the technical things that happened, because it looked so awesome. And we had some comedy happening in there with our poor little astromech floating and
sliding like, all over the place. Yeah, and Grogu's like, had later. A hard episode.
And Grogu like, later, I'm buckling into my bubble.
Yeah.
And closes it just like, bye, and it closed. I just love that whole thing.
You know, and I love Bo's
comment about flying in those mountains. And well, it's been a little longer than I thought.
Yes. Yes. Don't worry. I grew up here. Oh, okay. Maybe a little longer than I thought.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that Mando didn't say something like, remember, you have my kid on board.
Right.
Baby on board.
Well, she did look back, though, and Grogu's like, all right, I'm buckling in. Bloop.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay. He's going to float around and be fine.
Yep.
Maybe he'll use the Force and save us if things get bad. But I was still loving that whole scene. Like I said, I want some behind the scenes. I have to go dig it up. I'm sure it's out there.
Right.
To see how, if they use drones for some of that.
Well, my number two is Pershing gets his due. After a dispiriting day, it is menial New Republic job where Pershing realizes that all he's doing is cataloging old Imperial equipment so it can be destroyed. Not to bring up the other show, but this is the second time we've seen office life on Coruscant, and Andor's was much bleaker.
They hadn't caught up to this.
Yeah. Pershing asks his parole officer droid if he can continue his research just for fun, and the droid tells him no. But he decides to team up with Kane and steal some lab equipment so he can do it anyway. To hop on a train, dodge ticket-taker droids, and get off at a dump where old Imperial equipment is being decommissioned. Kane leads Pershing to a derelict Star Destroyer, navigating it all very easily. Well, that's where she found the ration crackers. And they find the untouched lab full of equipment. Pershing stocks up just as they hear noises outside of the ship, and they run right into a trap set by New Republic cops. They pointedly tell just Pershing that he's under arrest, and Kane casually makes off with his box of loot. That had my head scratching a little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pershing is hooked up to a machine that unnervingly calms Mon Calamari guy insists is a rehabilitation machine, one that will make him feel better and heal his traumatic Empire memory.
Yeah, I'm sure nothing could go wrong there.
No, Pershing knows what it really is, though, a mind flayer, which is some kind of Imperial torture device that an unnamed old ally of Din Djarin's first mentioned in a previous episode of the show.
Did either of you have a moment when they said mind flayer? Like, I went right to Stranger Things. I'm like,
oh, sure.
What?
Sure.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, are we doing a crossover? What's happening here?
Yeah. One of the New Republic officers takes Pershing glasses, a final vicious insult, and they turn on the device and leave Pershing to be brainwashed. Except for Kane, who asks to stick around and keep an eye on her friend. Once she's alone, she seems to jack up the power of the machine, causing Pershing to squirm and wince in pain, and then she eats one of those yellow biscuits he was so fond of.
Nice lady.
Yeah, when suddenly the laser turned red, you're like, oh, that's probably not good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Dave, you're number two?
I have a friend that says she's secretly working for the New Republic, and that was the plan. Well, if that's the plan, why'd she deep fry his brain? She's not doing my laundry if that's a brainwash.
Right.
You know? I'm conflicted. Speaking of conflicted, I had a couple of, maybe we can tie both of these scenes together. I like the train jumping too, but I also like the whole scene where they're in the train and there's a huge alien just staring at them.
Yeah.
And so she goes, Tongue's Day, am I right? And she's like, yeah, I hear you. And of course, dopey Pershing says, oh, I'm going to use that later.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. So number two is the train stuff.
Just okay, like all of it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Before we go on, I have a question for you both. The whole thing, like, oh, resources are limited, yada, yada. Then why are we not repurposing everything we're pulling off of the Imperial, like, everything that they have? It's like, oh, no, we're going to just take it and junk it and crush it. It's like, why would they not be repurposing everything?
Yeah, they even mentioned that they're decommissioning Republic ships, too.
Right.
I'm like, huh?
Like, it didn't make sense to me. It's like, everything's fine. We're going to just burn the world. It's like, no, why aren't we like, fine, tear it all apart and reuse all the material? Or yes, you have medical supplies in there. You have food in there. And it was just confusing me. And I'm thinking, does this crap happen in real life? Yeah, it probably does.
Yeah, yep. It's called victory disease.
Yep.
Okay, I just wanted to know I wasn't the only one who thought that was strange.
Yes.
Especially medical supplies. That seems so limited. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
Always is.
Okay, I'm sorry I cut you off, Steve. You were asking me about my number one. I have to say my number one was when the armorer basically opened her arms, you know, metaphorically, to Bo-Katan. It's like, you're one of us now. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And that's why I said, like, Bo-Katan's whole demeanor seemed to change in that moment as well.
Yes, it did.
And so I think things are going to be different, even though she doesn't necessarily believe in the way that the Children of the Watch do things. The fact that they are suddenly, like, opening themselves up for her to be part of their family and clan, I think is going to be a big deal for her. And I'm hoping that things all, what we've seen in the previews with the, I don't want to say space jump, but the Halo jumps with Amanda. Like, I'm hoping it's this whole clan. And they're like, we're going to be in charge of Mandalore again.
Yep. My number one is also the same. Basically, Din Djarin is redeemed. And we finally get back to what Din and Bo-Katan are up to. And we see that Din is taking Bo-Katan to the cave with the other Mandalorians that we saw in the season premiere. They try to give him a hard time, but he shows off his little vial of living water, and the armorer welcomes him back into the fold.
I was just thinking that they must have cleaned up that dead beast that was on the beach.
Yes.
I was surprised we didn't see a lot of grilling going on.
Yep. She even welcomes Bo-Katan into their fringe cult, seeing as how she also bathed in the waters and also hasn't removed her helmet since. The rest of the Mandalorians congratulate Din and Bo, and she actually seems kind of touched by it, though it's hard to read expressions through the helmet. This is quite appropriate, given she was a member of the initial Death Watch group. It will be exciting to see how this develops over the course of The Mandalorian Season 3 and whether Bo-Katan's loyalties change completely. Yes, it will.
For sure.
Yeah, the Armorer even called her Night Owl.
No, Paz Vizsla did.
Oh, yeah.
Was that Jon Favreau?
We don't know yet, but that's what everyone's assuming. In fact, it was a toy. You take the helmet off, Paz Vizsla, and it's Jon Favreau's face underneath.
Okay.
Right.
Spoiler alert!
I know he's been in some. But I wasn't 100%, but I swear it sounded like him.
Could be.
Yep.
So for night number one, I was torn again. Is it the dogfight, which I simply adored, you know, set for life? Or is it Bo-Katan's secret? Because it ends, the episode ends, she looks at the skull, the mythosaur. I'm like, oh, damn you, Bo. What are you hiding? And I thought, well, she must care for him because she's always saving Din Djarin. Like, no, wait a minute. She's always saving him because she wants the dark saber.
Yes.
And he's got it. Now she's got an end to this clan, too. Man, that's a couple of big secrets, you know, she's
especially
keeping.
Especially seeing that she lost her castle.
Yeah. Now she lives in a cave. Well, not exactly an upgrade.
No.
I'm really curious as to where they're going on this. I mean, I'm kind of blown away that she's just keeping it from everybody. I was also blown away when she saw the mythosaurus, and then she kept that a secret. Like, come on, lady.
Yeah.
That's going to come out at a opportune time.
Is she really?
I think so. Yep.
Yeah. Is she really that devious, though?
Okay, so this is my theory with that, just because you brought it up. I think she's going to, now that she's part of this Din Djarin's clan, talk to the armorer, because the armorer seems to be like the head of the clan with all the brains and everything. She's going to ask her to talk and tell her, Mandalore is not poisoned and it's welcoming us back because, and then tell her what she's seen when she went down to get Din Djarin. And I think that's what's going to change a lot of stuff. And then somehow the armor is going to get it out to the universe. And then like all the Mandalorians are going to come back and be like, yes, we're home. Yay. Not so chibi.
Yeah. I could just people. Got Mandalorians coming back to the home planet going, oh, wow. This place is a mess.
We have a lot to do.
Yeah, a lot of work to do.
You don't think she's going to do something like that, Dave? I mean, you said you don't think she's that devious. I think it's more she's trying to plan.
I just wonder if she is. I mean, because to me, it looks like she's playing a long game. So that means I don't trust her.
Right.
That's how I feel about most of the people, other than Din and Grogu are the only two that I trust. fully.
We first saw her, she's just sitting on that throne, you know, insouciantly and bored, and no one's following. Oh, I don't know the, you know, dark saber, so I just sit here by myself. And she tried to chase him away, so that's actually a plus for her. And when Baby Grogu shows up with R5, like, where is he? I don't know, it's because she actually cares, or damn it, he's got the dark saber. I have to save his butt again. Hard to know. We're going to find out. It's going to be a bit of a shock, I got a feeling.
Yeah, I think Din will be upset if she actually goes to the armorer with the information about the mythosaur and not him.
Yeah, for sure.
Nope. We shall see.
But if she goes to the armorer and say that the mythosaur is what was there, what pulled Din down, maybe they're like, oh, he's the next Mandalore. Like,
right.
The second Mandalore, not the first, but so then they'd take it to him and that way. It's like, you're going to lead us. And he's like, what? I got a kid, people. Back up.
Yeah.
What if they make them fight? He's got the darksaber. She has seen the mythosaur, which they revere. So I'm only going to, I mean, speaking of Star Trek, we'll be getting to shortly in our recording. And there's the ye olde fight to the death. What if they set up just so someone can hold the darksaber legitimately? I mean, he won it.
Right.
She wants it. She used to lead them, and she's seen the mythosaur. So I wonder if they're going to take him out to the beach and say, you guys have at it.
She did have Din and that other one fight before over the darksaber.
Yep.
And they didn't go to the death. They went till he yielded.
Well, we know she's speaking for the darksaber.
Yeah, I know. And Din might just be like, I yield. Or Grogu's going to be like, don't you mess with my dad.
Yeah.
Like, interfere. And then that could be bad, too, because he could tear everybody apart. That would be really dark. And I'm sorry I went that way with Grogu.
Can't wait Wednesday. Or is it Tongues Day?
Yeah.
All right. Honorable mentions. I only have one, really, but Sean, go ahead.
You know what? And I know this is bad because I was kind of like, eh, I don't know how I feel about that. But the moment where you think where they played us all, but when the doctor and our comms officer were walking and eating like ice cream, because it just almost felt genuine. Right, so I was just thinking, oh, okay, maybe this is real. And she's like, oh, I grew up here and, you know, talking about this, that. And you see everything, and it just seemed like a normal, everyday kind of thing, which we know while they were in the Empire, they did not have. I kind of liked that, and I was like, oh, okay, this is just kind of sweet and just normal. And then everything went to crap.
Yep.
But, you know, I guess you take the little moments. Of course, the doctor didn't feel that way at the end, but, you know, we'll just stick with this one moment in time.
Right.
Yeah,
you know, she may be genuine. The only way to make sure he'd forget about his cloning experiments would be to erase it from his mind, hopefully.
And you know what? I have to say, too, I feel like, okay, you don't want him to clone people. Understandable. But you can clone, like, plants and stuff so you can feed the masses.
Right.
Like, why not have him work, I don't know, that horticulture, agriculture, whichever way you want to put it, to help that way.
Well, he said in his speech to start out the episode, at least his part of it, was his mother died of a heart ailment, but we should be cloning parts, like hearts. Yes.
That kind of threw me, but then it's like, okay, he was Outer Rim or whatever, so yeah, maybe they don't have the same kind of technologies, because I don't see anybody in Coruscant having that problem, necessarily, except if you're down in the depth.
Right.
But yeah, that makes sense. It's like, okay, hey, we can help people medically. I don't have to clone people. Just try to clone and help people medically somehow. But, you know, there's always somebody that wants to throw everything out of whack. Sorry, I'm done.
Steve?
Yeah, I've got a few. Of course, it was a joy to see R5 just sliding all over Bo's ship during the TIE battle. I thought that was hilarious. And Grogu just kind of watching him go by. You could help him, pick him up. Force pick him up. Come on, Grogu. And, of course, Din Djarin doesn't quite land the superhero pose as he jumps out of Bo's ship. It's a trap! My player scene features one of the funnier Easter eggs in The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 3. The being running the procedure is a Mon Calamari, a well-established Star Wars race, with the most notable Mon Cal being Admiral Ackbar from Return of the Jedi. Ackbar is most famous for the line, "It's a trap!" And the Mon Cal reacts to Pershing's plea that he too was led into a trap. Of course, the armorer, recognizing Bo-Katan's marking, identifying her as a night owl,
Yeah.
Those Night Owls were introduced in Star Wars The Clone Wars, an elite, primarily female group of warriors. They split after Darth Maul took control of Mandalore during the Clone Wars, with some following Maul and others remaining with Bo-Katan. And that's my honorable mentions.
Pizla didn't seem too happy to see her.
No.
Night Owl, he almost spit that out.
Maybe they had a run-in before.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay, one of my honorable mentions here. Did anybody else get an Indiana Jones vibe?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
See?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, anytime someone asks for tickets, I'm like, oh, I thought, actually, they did jump off the train, but they throw him out, like, Indy threw the guy out of the Zeppelin.
Right.
And he looked at everybody, no ticket.
Matt Smith did the same thing in Dogma. And instantly when they asked that, wait, is it Matt Smith? Look, now I think I said the wrong name. The guy who did Clerk, having a brain fart. But instantly
Silent Bob and Jay?
Yes, Silent Bob. He's the director.
Okay,
But in Dogma.
Oh, yeah, he did.
I said Matt Smith. I'm thinking Doctor Who. But instantly when he's like, tickets, Jason goes, tickets, like they're going to throw somebody out the door. So, yes, I love that moment.
In closing, that the only thing and it's not a moment, but Alaya Kane has her secret and Bo-Katan has her secret. So, gosh, it has to come out. I don't trust either one of them.
Yep.
Although I like them both.
It was Kevin Smith. My fault.
There you go.
Not a Smith. I'm sorry. Do you think at some point Bo is going to end up face to face with Alaya? Or wait, that's what you said her name was, right?
Yeah.
Alaya Kane. Yeah. Comms officer Kane.
Yeah, I'll call her comms officer. But do you think at some point they're going to come head to head?
I don't see how. Boy, that'd be a small galaxy.
Okay, here's the question I have for both of you, though.
Okay.
We know that TIE fighters are not long range. Where the hell did all those fighters come from?
Isn't that what is either Bo or Din Djarin said that? Like, I think she said that's a lot of TIE interceptors for a warlord.
Right.
First Order is in the far distance, so yeah. I was trying to argue down at the local comic store that Moff Gideon did get away. He's out there pulling the strings and forming up his own little private army, I guess. Right.
Based on Mandalore, probably.
You think so? On Mandalore itself?
Yeah, because they were right on their tail, almost right after they left.
If not on one of the moons, then. There's a couple of moons there. It's certainly not Bo-Katan's moon. I think she would figure that out, I hope.
Right.
Wait, they were on the other side this whole time? So, going down a rabbit hole, I found something that said that this week's Bad Batch was connected to this week's Mandalorian because of the base they were talking about on whatever moon that the Bad Batch was on. That's where there's a base, right? An Empire base, or Imperial base, sorry. And that's where all these fighters were. Like, they have a little, like you said, like a private army or something, like building there where nobody knows they're there yet. But I don't know if it's supposed to be in that system. But like randomly, and I'm wondering if that wasn't so much of a throwaway line now, when Din Djarin said, oh, I didn't grow up on Mandalore, I grew up on this moon or whatever.
Right.
So maybe that it wasn't as much of a throwaway as we thought.
Very possible.
Yeah. Bad Batch is almost in the deep past, though.
I know, but if there was a base there, it's not like, they're not wrecking everything. They're decommissioning it. Oh, don't go there. It's decommissioned. Whatever. I do what I want, you know?
Yeah. Well, we do have some feedback for this episode. Our friend Fred from the Netherlands has provided his thoughts, so let's take a listen.
Hello, Steve, Dave, and Sean. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 3. Well, the beginning of this episode was really a Star Wars trope in the sense of big air fight and going into a gorge, which is a word, by the way, I had to look up. I didn't know that before, but these gorges are gorgeous. That's something different. These gorges are such a Star Wars trope, whether it's a gorge between rocks or on a Death Star or between buildings or whatever. And in recent series, I got a bit annoyed by it, like, okay, it's Star Wars, a gorge again. But seeing it now for the 10,000th time, I'm going to change my feeling and I'm going to say, this belongs to Star Wars And if there is not a gorge fight in a movie or in a season of a series, I'm going to dismiss it as this is not Star Wars. Nevertheless, it was a great scene and great CGI. And then we get to the B story about the Doctor. Well, actually it's the A story if you look at how much time of the episode it takes. Actually, this whole story took me a little bit too long, but that is mainly because I didn't know where it would go. And what they did very well is constantly place you in doubt whether this Doctor is a spy or something like that. Or is he really doing his best to be an exemplary citizen of the New Republic? And the same is true for this Elia. Is she just a rascal? Or is she more? Well, we surely will know what was this all about, because this took so much time, it can't be that we won't get any follow-up on this. A little nitpick was, of course, how this scrap heap cruiser has power enough for electric doors, but okay. And by the way, the whole train journey and going to this out-of-the-city scrap heap reminded me very much of a similar situation in the 2020 series Brave New World with Jessica Brown Findlay. For people who know that series, very, very nice if you like genre science fiction and literature. It's based on the Brave New World, of course. Okay, that will be all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
All right, I have to agree with Fred and the gorgeous gorge.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. And we have talked about that in the past on our show. It's like, oh, this is such a our Star Wars thing that it happened so often. And I didn't even think of it because I was so focused on, oh, wow, that looks so pretty. And like all of this. And I wonder if it was a drone or if it was this. And I find that it's just kind of something in the back of your mind now that you know it'll probably happen at some point, but you almost don't think about it. But when it happens, you're like, yeah, that needed to happen.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out, too, with the whole scrap heap. It's like, okay, we're going to keep everything on Coruscant because we are just a huge planet of buildings and we just keep throwing stuff on top. It's like, you might as well just have a trash heap like planet because that's what it's feeling like at this point.
Right.
Kind of reminds me of Mandalore when they had all these bottled cities themselves and then those things were living out in the wild. Things that Grogu taught or living in the cage.
Yeah, the Amalite.
Yeah, weird. Yeah, I think Elia is a rascal, Fred.
Yep. I love that you use that word too, rascal.
Rascal, I know. She's a little rascal.
We need some other.
And I do kind of agree with Fred that the Pershing story did take a little bit longer than what I would be willing to give it.
Yeah, it did kind of take me out for a little bit. Like I said, there was moments, but it's like, what? It feels like a whole different story, like a whole different show right here.
Well, as always, Fred, we appreciate your feedback and looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the next episode.
Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Fred.
What? How about we get to the ratings? Because we kind of forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
And we jumped over them again.
I'm thinking Steve doesn't want to rate this episode. He's like, let's move past that. In fact, never go back again. Points if you know what that's from. All right, so out of 5, because that's our standard, I'm gonna give it a 3, and that was only because of the first part with the whole Mandalorian and Bo-Katan and, you know, the awesome fighting.
Yep.
Because I mean, I would have probably pushed it up higher, but yeah, the whole thing with the Doctor did kind of pull me out of it, so I'm gonna just stick with the 3. Like most of it and hate it. So that's the best I can do. And I can't even give it a thing. Or I can, okay, 3 mattress pallets. How about that? That's about the best I got.
Well, Steve, I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5. Pershing's flayed mind.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That sounds like it's bad though, too. I mean,
yeah, you can almost hear the sizzle.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go the same route. I'm giving it 3.5 out of 5 yellow biscuits.
The biscuit. Can I ask one final question too? Why would medical personnel all leave a procedure? They're like, yeah, nothing could happen. Bye. We'll be back.
Right.
We're going to leave some rando in here with the controls.
She had to have blown her cover doing that, right? Oh, I just put my hand on
it. Oh, yeah, has to. Yeah, they'll come back in and see him just French fried. And the only person that could have done it was Kane.
Yeah.
Now she'll turn it back down.
Yeah. And it'll be sorry, right. I thought it was the stereo.
Yeah.
Oh, I slipped. My hand hit the controls. I don't know. That just seems so... Or she's just going to walk away. Be like, nobody will know I'm here.
Yeah. Well, I have to think that somebody's going to pick her up now because mission accomplished. Got rid of Pershing and stole his tech.
Right.
I have to believe it's... I don't know if the client's alive or not, but I have to believe that it's either Moff Gideon or... I heard one thing about Grand Admiral Thawne, and I'm like, no, it's a little early. That's supposed to be a Ahsoka-based. We shall see.
Yep. All right. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 10 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback, be it email or audio, to contact us at fangirlzone.com.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans to show find us, as there are plenty of other Mandalorian podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and I hope you're enjoying our podcast, and don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
You can check us out over at www.fangirlzone.com. You can check our contacts page with all of the ways to get a hold of us, because there's many, many ways. Or you can go and check out all the other podcasts, like the other Star series that's out there. Maybe you like that franchise as well. And, you know, you can go check out the Captain's Chair. You might like the hosts over there. You never know. So, for this episode of the Mudhorn Clan Cast,
I'm Sith Lord Steve. I heard they hooked him up to a mind flayer.
I'm Sean Fangirl S. And I just want to know, do they have chocolate anywhere in this galaxy? Because otherwise it can stay far, far away.
And this is Beskar Dave. And I just want to ask you guys something. Do you think I'd be redeemed if I took a bath with Bo-Katan?
There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat. There is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the Fangirl Zone.